Sir, and today he's going to talk to tell us about just one of his many projects.
Thanks. Yeah. So today I'll talk about multipath routing and an evolutionary framework for introducing it in the internet. So this work is by my PhD student Hema Kaur and a bunch of master students who helped in the implementation. There were some other students also who participated in this. This work is funded by Intel and DARPA. So the essential question we are trying to answer in this research was motivated by actually Van Jacobsen's talk in SIGCOM 2001, where he said this needs to be more work in routing. And he talked about circuit type paradigms and trying to get equivalents of them in connectionless paradigms. So we started off with the simple question, can we emulate a subset of MPLS or multi-protocol label switching, or basically signal properties without signaling? So in particular, we were interested in the sub-question of source routing. Can we do source routing without signaling, that is, without requiring an out-of-band signaling protocol, without variable per packet overhead, or variable, in fact, large per packet overhead as is done in IP, V4 and V6. We want it to be backward compatible to OSPF and BGP so that we don't want to actually develop, replace the entire infrastructure with something completely new. And we want to also be able to incrementally upgrade a network to offer these capabilities. So we broadly view the traffic engineering. So traffic engineering is a word that's used inside ISP networks for optimizing performance, primarily through routing and assignment of traffic aggregates through routes. But we see traffic engineering in a more broader light, and so we'd like to bring the benefits of managing and engineering traffic all the way to the end systems or to enterprises. And to some extent, that's already happening. Enterprises are already multi-homed. They're trying to use their multiple connections to the internet. But this is not filtered all the way back to the end systems, where end systems typically have only one connection to the internet. And so we see the traffic engineering spectrum as a spectrum. On the left side of the spectrum, you have the shortest path or single path paradigm. And on the right-hand side, you have arbitrary flexibility in terms of setting up paths and mapping traffic to paths. So intermediate points in the spectrum would capture places which don't necessarily have quantitative guarantees on performance, but could get qualitative benefits. So this is the area we're targeting for. So why cannot we do it today? Connectionless protocols like OSPF, BGP, and other protocols out there were designed to provide best effort connectivity. That is, to provide a single route between source to destination. And even though they were designed for that, they did provide parametric hooks to tweak these protocols so that by changing these parameters, in particular link weights or a variety of BGP parameters, one can achieve traffic engineering ends. Like BGP provides a bunch of parameters like local pref, med, and so on. OSPF and ISIs provide link weights, which you can tweak. Okay, but overall, the limitation still is that you have only a single path from source to destination. So if you want to remap traffic from one path to the other, you're also forced to change the path itself. And to change the path, you have to actually send out routing announcements, and it is linked with routing stability questions. So to give you a simple idea, in the shortest path paradigm, take a very simple network here. I have flows going from A to E and A to D. Because a subset of a shortest path is also a shortest path, the A to D flow goes on the same subpath as the A to E flow. Okay. Now, I could tweak these link weight parameters, like I could change the link weights to different link weights. What will happen is that then the mapping from A to E will be changed, but unfortunately, the mapping from A to D will also be changed. But what we cannot do with OSPF or any of the single route schemes is I cannot, in a fine granularity, map one flow to go on one path, the other flow to go on the other path.
That's not completely true.
It is true if you're starting from the same source to the same destination. It is possible.
I think
So this is a, in this case, I'm viewing this as a, but the policy routing are slightly different, but even in BGP there are limitations. If you want to send traffic to a particular prefix, you're allowed to choose only one exit to it. So all traffic from an IBGP router will go to one exit. It is not possible to split the traffic. You can try to break down the aggregates and so on and so forth, but you add routing table state and so on and so forth.
Here you're viewing A as a point, but I'm viewing A as a network.
Yeah, A
router,
is. Mm-hmm.
Where one router chooses ACD and the other router chooses ABD.
Yeah, so if you choose a single router, but I'm talking about a single node here. We'll come to BGP issues and cover later. Okay, so the alternative which has been proposed in the connection-oriented or signaled world is in ATM or MPLS. Essentially, you would the process of setting up a path is decoupled from the process of actually mapping traffic onto the path. So obviously, it is signaled. And so MPLS works primarily within a single area. And even though there have been some proposals to extend MPLS across areas, it becomes extremely complex very quickly to extend signaling to cross area boundaries or to make signaling cross domain boundaries, even if it's controlled by the same autonomous same organization. And it is not definitely a solution for inter-autonomous system, like, for example, BGP-type style operation. And MPLS also needs the support of all the nodes along the path. So if you take a closer look at one of the functions, essential functions of signaling, of what signaling actually does in MPLS. Signaling maps global identifiers, that is a notion of address or a notion of a path, to local identifiers, also called labels. So actually the signaling goes through the path and sets up these label associations at every router. Okay. So this is one of the fundamental jobs of signaling. In addition, it also may reserve resources. Okay. So you might view that as a resource reservation as a separate question, but in order to nail down the path, it maps global identifiers, which are addresses or path specifications, to local identifiers. So after the mapping has been done, you can do label swapping to send packets across your network. So one of the simplest observations we did in this work was to observe that instead of using local path identifiers or labels in MPLS, why not use globally meaningful path identifiers, which are also small. Okay, so you can think of these as global labels rather than local labels as used in MPLS. So to give you an idea here, these global labels essentially means that it has some global significance or global semantics. So I'm talking about a trivial global label here. Think of a network here which has already an OSPF network which has link weights and node IDs. For simplicity, I will construct a global identifier out of link weights. Okay, it's not the best way to do it, but this is for simple illustration. So consider this identifier 36, which is a sum of 9 and 27. So it essentially takes the path and looks at the global identifiers on the path and creates a function or a hash of these global identifiers and puts them in the packet. Okay, and this, after crossing intermediate routers, you can change or process this global identifier, or you can swap this global identifier with another global identifier here. Essentially, it is the global identifier for the remaining path, which is 27. Okay, and at the end, you have a global identifier 0. So what is essentially different here is that because you are constructing these identifiers based upon global variables, you don't need signaling to coordinate these you don't need signaling to tell these intermediate nodes what are the identifiers they should have for the path. So if two nodes look at the same path, they will construct the same identifier provided they agree on a hash function. Okay, so to generalize this concept, if you consider a path from node in a topology, from I to J, it goes through a bunch of links and a bunch of nodes. And in an OSPF setting, these nodes have router IDs, links have link weights or link IDs. And essentially what you have here is a sequence of router IDs and link IDs, and you're condensing the sequence into an identifier. So that is what we call path identifier. And the key ideas in this work are to swap or process global path identifiers hop by hop instead of local path identifiers. So the other benefits so the key benefit here is to avoid the need to map the entire path specification to local identifiers. Okay. And then the other benefits we get are, since we're using fixed length identifiers or efficient identifiers, we won't have the inefficiencies of IPv4 or IPv6 encoding of paths. That's number one. And then the other benefits we shall talk about in a moment are that we don't need to upgrade the entire network to make this happen. You can upgrade just a subset of nodes and have this functionality. Okay.
Why is that? Isn't that just an artifact of how you are going to maintain the state in the packet, these identifiers?
Yes, yes. So it's a consequence of dynamic
so
packets. So you can think of this as a
technique to maintain the state for MPLS. You can make the same argument about MPLS.
Right. Right. So then, I mean, so it's MPLS using global identifiers in which case. So. Right. So the goal here overall is, it's not a question of whether I'm doing this in IP or MPLS, it's a question of whether I'm avoiding signaling or not. So so we are trying to remove the rationale for needing a signaling protocol to do the mapping.
My comment was only with respect to your statement about abstractability, incremental deployability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So essentially what we do is we take a sequence of globally known node IDs and link weights and compute a hash of the sequence that is locally computable without the need for a signaling protocol. So there are several kinds of potential hash functions, and Ian here has actually suggested a hash function in the Lira work, okay, so which is the XOR function. There are ways of doing things, say, using MD5, or you can use a CRC32 or any combination of these. So the observation we made was that the choice of the hash function determines the properties of the protocol. You could actually have more or less flexibility of moving functions within the architecture based upon the types of hash functions you choose. In fact, if you look at it, a trivial hash function of the path is just the destination address itself. But then that is not a true path identifier, because it does not actually encode what particular path it takes. It is just a hash function. It doesn't mean that it's actually a good identifier for the path. It's not. Another properties we'd like for this identifier is that it should have a low collision probability and so on. So we propose a canonical method to use a combination of MD5 hashing and the CRC32 to get a 32-bit hash value. Okay, it's not particularly this need not be the only sort of hash function. There are other hash functions for this canonical thing. So what I'll try to argue as we go along is that different path ID encodings or different hash functions we choose have different architectural implications. So how does the forwarding happen? Okay, what is the basic forwarding paradigm here? So in IP, we normally have the notion of a destination prefix and an X hop in the table. So when a packet comes, you match the destination prefix, longest prefix match, and you send it to the next hop. So in addition to this, we propose to have a path ID field that is exactly matched, okay, and then you swap out, so you replace the incoming path ID with the outgoing path ID, which is nothing but the path ID of the remaining piece of the path, okay, and this remaining piece of the path can be locally computed here. So in particular, if I consider the path as a sequence of node identifiers, 1i, 1, 2, k, and so on, so at the node k, the packet will come in with a hash of the path k plus 1 through m minus 1. And when it goes out, it will go to the hash of k plus 1 through m minus 1. So it's just a suffix path. Okay. So as you see, essentially it is a combination of a longest prefix match and exact label match. So it's like a hybrid of MPLS forwarding and IP forwarding. And the difference, of course, is that you don't need a signaling protocol to actually coordinate this. The default policy we have for mismatch is map it to zero and send it on the shortest path. Okay, so we have not thought carefully about all the various error scenarios, but this seems to work.
Because mismatch can happen.
Yes, I mean, if you choose the path ID wrongly in the first place, you can have mismatches, yes. So we just have a simple default to make sure that the path doesn't go in packets don't go in a loop infinitely, and they just go to the destination. Okay, there could be other policies for handling with mismatches. Okay, so this overall framework we call as Bananas. It's inspired by Herbie Goes Bananas, which is one of the movies. So essentially, I use the word explicit routing just to avoid the word source-based routing. Source-based routing has sometimes a misnomer that the route is actually chosen by the source host. Okay, so here, an intermediate node on behalf of the source, like an edge node on behalf of the source, could choose a route, and it could only choose a route within its limit of visibility. It could only choose a route within a domain, for example. Or an interdomain router could choose a multi-domain route, but could may not have control of the route within a domain. So we call this explicit routing, but you can view it as source-based routing, provided you don't think of it as the source specifies the complete edge end-to-end route. Okay. So now, essentially, we have the capability that routes can be chosen and traffic aggregates can be mapped to desired routes. Okay. So this is the basic capability we wanted to emulate out of MPLS. Okay. So I could choose different labels or global labels to throw packets on different routes. Okay. Now, under partial deployment conditions, that is, I take a network that is operating OSPF and providing a shortest path technique, and then I upgrade a few routers, in this case just red routers, to provide multipathing capabilities. I have not yet described how to compute all the multipaths, etc., but assume that all multipaths are available from these red routers. So it turns out that there are these black routers in the middle of the path, and they do not honor multipath forwarding. All they do is, when a packet comes, they don't even see this path ID field. They will just send the packet on the shortest path. Okay, so it will turn out that some of these paths may not be available because of the fact that you have not upgraded all routers. Okay, so that is a trade-off in the scheme. So if you want to do partial upgrade, we are willing to live with the case that we might not have all routes, but we might also not desire all routes. Yeah.
Okay, so here is my question. Why you can't do this with MPLS?
So in MPLS, you have to actually run a signaling protocol to, and you have to forward the signaling call, right?
RSVP for signaling protocol, RSVP can do this, right? Can bypass.
But you might have intermediate nodes which don't.
The only problem is MPLS between the link layer and the networking layer, and you don't know how to do with a packet and you get such a packet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you put that state somewhere else. Like we are going to put it.
In the IP layer, right.
It shouldn't be, I don't see the difference. So
right.
Fundamental, at least I don't see anything fundamental which will make MPLS less upgrade.
No, you can upgrade MPLS, for example, to operate without signaling. I mean, it's my goal, as I mentioned.
I'm not talking about signaling.
Right.
I'm talking about the statement that MPLS cannot run if it can run only if all the nodes are again MPLS aware.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is that while this is a technical limitation today,
this is not a fundamental. Probably it has to do with the IP layer. Okay. Anyway, so the path here, all paths are not available, but essentially there are some paths available. And the challenge here is to find all the paths that are available at the upgraded routers in a consistent manner. So we then developed a bunch of route computation algorithms which can work under the constraint that only subset of nodes are upgraded. So the only assumption we make is in the link state advertisements, we extend it with a single bit to tell that that router is colored red and the other router is colored black. Okay, routers which are colored black don't set the bit. And we call this a multipath capable bit. And we developed a simplistic route computation algorithm where the red node will do Dijkstra's for all the black nodes. That is, it will figure out what the shortest path forwarding for the black nodes are. And for the red nodes, it will basically explore all possible outlets. Okay, this is a very inefficient algorithm if there's lots of red nodes in the network. Okay, it can quickly become exponential complexity. But this is an algorithm which is guaranteed to find all possible paths, which under the constraint that there's partial upgrade. Okay. So we then implemented this both on Linux and SSFnet using MIT's Click modular router, and we tested it on a reasonable sized topologies using Utah's Emulab testbed. So here's a very simple example of that basic algorithm, where these yellow nodes here are the ones which are upgraded, and the other nodes are not upgraded. And normally the default path is this path, but now this node at 1, I have multiple entries for destination 4. Okay, this is just a part of the routing table. And essentially here, if I want to choose a path which is a circuitous path here, it is possible for me to compute this path using the algorithm I just described. And all these paths will be encoded in the routing table. And so essentially when a packet is would like to be mapped on this path, it will be sent to the suffix ID of 177. In this case, it is just the sum of the link weights used for simplicity here. Okay, we also did a lot of simulation results where we looked at some larger topologies and so on. Okay, I'll just quickly skip through this. Okay, the next refinement we did was that instead of constraining everybody to find all possible paths, we wanted to have some control over the computational complexity and the state complexity at upgraded routers. Okay, so we observed that you can have heterogeneous route computation algorithms at different routers. So what this means is that this router A can have a different route computation algorithm. In other words, it could maintain more routes, or it would like to compute more routes than other router B, maybe because of its capacity, etc. So that was the first relaxation we did. So we found that in terms of just the basic route computation, we allow flexibility in terms of how many what route computation algorithm you can use, so long as you also compute the shortest path. This is the only constraint. Okay. So there are a variety of route computation algorithms out there in the algorithms literature. So one particular class of algorithms we took just for testing this is the k-shortest path algorithm, where the way we tested it was that each red router, we could assign different values of k so that they can compute different sets of paths. Okay. But the issue here is that if I compute a set of k paths, okay, because of the fact that there's only partial set of nodes which are upgraded in the network, the forwarding for these paths may not exist. Okay, I might actually compute one path which goes through a set of upgraded red and green routers, but the green router might not provide the forwarding for me because it always forwards the packet on the shortest path. Okay, so we need to validate the forwarding availability for the paths or k shortest paths which are chosen. So essentially, what we're trying to do is we are trying to compute k paths and then trying to throw out paths which are invalid, so we can have up to k paths. Where k is a tunable parameter and k can be chosen differently at different routers. Okay, so we developed a two-phase validation algorithm to validate the paths that are possible. So the validation algorithm just works by mathematical induction. The basic concept is that the forwarding for a path will exist only if the forwarding for all its path suffixes exist. Okay, so given that condition, in phase one we just compute all the paths both from at this router and all the paths which other routers may compute. Okay, so that is the number one. So essentially, we compute all possible routes in the network, and then we just sort all these paths by hop count. So we just take the bundle of paths that have hop count of 1. Okay, which means that this path just goes from one node to the next node. And this, the fact that you computed it means that this path is always valid. So all paths of hop count 1 are valid. So paths of hop count p are valid if I can look it up in the validated subset of paths p minus 1. And then in the process, if I cannot find the path in the p minus 1 subset, then I just throw out the path as invalid. So here's a simple procedure which uses mathematical induction to validate the paths. Okay. So we showed this polynomial complexity, unlike the exponential complexity. So the overall theme here has been to try to have more flexibility in terms of route computation algorithms and in terms of control over complexity and state maintained at these routers. Okay, but still we were not very satisfied with this. By the way, the way we implemented this in OSPF is that for this heterogeneous route computation algorithm to work, each upgraded router should announce the parameters of the routing algorithm it uses. Okay, so we just did a simple fix to announce the value of k in an unused LSA extension. So the only extensions we need are in the LSA, OSPF LSAs, and these extensions are not interpreted by the non-upgraded routers. So the upgraded routers know who else is upgraded, that is, who else is multipath capable, and will also know what is the algorithm, what are the parameters, so that they can run the prior algorithm. Okay, all this is fairly simplistic so far. So again, we sort of tested this. So you can have a bunch of fairly large topology in just a few nodes which are upgraded to compute these paths. and you can give different values of k, like 3 and 5 and so on at different nodes, and you can look at what is the average number of paths they actually computed. Okay, so this is obviously going to be very different for different topologies and so on and so forth. So, but there's just a degree of freedom which is provided by this. So the next refinement we provided for interdomain routing is to use a different path ID encoding. Okay, and the primary issue, as I articulated, is that you are having an increase in computation complexity as well as storage complexity in upgraded nodes. So the overall question is, can I manage this complexity somehow? So if there are upgraded routers, just like in DiffServ, if there are edge upgraded routers and core upgraded routers, can I move the complexity of computation and state just to the edge nodes and actually simplify the core nodes? So the answer is yes. And we found this by actually exploring an alternative path ID encoding, which I'll describe in a moment. As I mentioned, the path ID as a concept, it just means that I should be, at any node, I should be able to locally compute a path that is globally consistent. Okay, so here's another way of computing an interesting, another way of developing a path ID. At each node which is upgraded, you can look at the links. Okay, now these links have also global identifiers, like they might be the link IP address, for example. Okay, and I can hash these link IP addresses to form local hashes, okay? And one simple form of local hash is an index, okay? So I can take the well-known IP addresses and then just index these links, okay? And have an index of these things here. So then what I do is the path ID end-to-end is just a simple concatenation of the local link hashes, okay? So why is this interesting? So the answer is architectural flexibility. And why is that? Why is there architectural flexibility? Interior nodes now do not need to actually compute paths. They do not need to do any route computation algorithm. They just need to maintain this index table for every kind of every link. Okay, so if I have say 100 links, my entire table size is only 100, at least as far as the multipath routing part goes. And then and when the packet comes. And all the paths are only computed at the edge nodes, and edge nodes, each node can compute different number of paths. And in fact, more paths are available in the network because the validation algorithms are simpler, etc. Okay, I won't go into the details of that. But essentially, you have only minimal state at the internal nodes, and there's no control plane computation complexity or state storage. And edge nodes are the only place where you compute the routes, and you have arbitrary flexibility in terms of what are the algorithms you can use there. You still have the constraint that you might come up with a path at the edge node which might not exist inside the core node. So you have to validate it. Okay, and the two-phase validation algorithm need not be used. A much more simpler validation algorithm procedure can be done.
So in this case, identifier of the path will increase with the...
Yeah, so this is the trade-off. So you are now talking about a variable length encoding of the path identifier, and so in practice you could sort of cap it and say that, okay, I'm going to allocate say 64 bits for path ID and you can encode as many paths as you can. So that might limit the path hop counts and so on. So that is the trade-off.
So why is this different from MPLS path? I mean, router putting the MPLS path in the MPLS level.
So
that also has a notion of...
Now, MPLS labels are chosen locally. When your signaling protocol goes and asks the MPLS router to give me a label, you just come up, you can come randomly with a label. So there is no notion of concatenating labels. I mean, and you do label switching, you don't have a concatenated set of labels. I mean, it is much more similar to IP loose source routing. In IP loose source routing, you specify loose source route or strict source route, which is a concatenation of IP addresses. So instead of it being a concatenation of IP addresses, we have a concatenation of some function of the IP addresses. So,
and the main reason for that is to reduce the
size, encoding efficiency, and also it reduces the complexity of interior nodes. Okay, so moving on. So the forwarding example here is that the forwarding algorithm also at interior routes is very efficient. What you do essentially is to extract the number of bits based upon the number of interfaces you have and out of the path ID, and then based upon your index table, you figure out what is the outgoing interface, and throw the packet on that outgoing interface and also update the path ID. Okay, this in this case, I've shown the way I've described it. You don't even have to look at the IP address to do this forwarding. Okay, the way actually we've implemented is you always have fallback if path IDs are invalid, etc. So here's a simple example: when a packet goes from this path, you see the path IDs. I don't know whether it's making much sense here. Okay, I'll give a different example. Anyway, so the path IDs essentially are extracted out of a series of bits just by simple bit shifting, etc. Okay, so now if I have multiple areas, if I want to extend this across area boundaries, which is another overall goal, essentially we follow a model which has some similarity to PNNI. The idea is very simple. Path ID is reinitialized across area boundaries, so it has no meaning as soon as you cross area boundaries. So what this means is that upgraded nodes can only choose explicit paths within their domain of visibility. Had a question? Okay. So, and when it crosses area boundaries, you are free to choose explicit paths after crossing the area boundary, provided that area is upgraded, etc. So this is why this is sort of somewhat different from end-to-end source routing, where my goal is not to find an end-to-end source route, but to provide explicit routing capabilities within my domain of control, or within the domain in which I can actually see routes, okay, as a router. Okay, a router which is an OSPF router does not necessarily see routes outside the area, so I can only pick explicit routes to an area border router in whatever version of OSPF, and then area border router has the flexibility to pick explicit routes through area zero, which you would typically not do because of constraints in OSPF, and then when you go to the other area, you can choose explicit routes over there. Okay, so I don't want to get into this. But one can compare this source routing model with PNNI, which is a well-known source routed protocol for ATM signal-based thing. It's similar, but the notion is weaker. Okay, now we can take the same idea and extend it for inter-domain concepts. Okay, in inter-domain, we target three problems. Two problems. One is the inter-domain traffic engineering. When you talk to ISPs today, there are different kinds of problems. One is that ISPs have complex peering agreements and transit agreements with other ISPs, and these have monetary value. So, in fact, a peering agreement might become a transit agreement if you increase your traffic beyond some threshold, especially if you increase the traffic ratio between inbound and outbound beyond some threshold. So ISPs are trying to manage their traffic, especially outbound traffic and inbound traffic, so that they can keep the ratio so that they don't pay peering fees. So outbound traffic engineering means, in our context, it just means that instead of choosing an explicit path, I'm just trying to choose an explicit exit out of my domain. Okay, so explicit exit or multiple exits for the same destination address is only a special case of explicit path, okay, or multipath. So multipath actually specifies the entire route, and explicit exit just mentions one component of that route. So we view it as a special case of explicit path routing. And the goal here is overall to obtain fine-grained control over outbound traffic engineering decisions. And we come up with a fairly trivial method of handling this. So instead of using a path ID hash, we just take the explicit exit autonomous system border router, or ASBR as it's called. So I just take the border router's IP address as the hash. Okay, so there's nothing interesting to hash. So just take the address, and what I do is, I'll just describe in a moment, we do a procedure similar to MPLS tunneling. We don't solve the inbound traffic engineering problem, which some people consider very important and currently not tackled in BGP. But we provide some flexibility for specifying AS paths explicitly using what we call an ePath ID concept, which is similar to, it's called an external path ID rather than internal path ID. Okay, so let's look at this. So explicit routing, the way we do it is that, okay, I have a network now, I'm talking a BGP routers, eBGP and iBGP, and there's, of course, internal routers which are running OSPF, etc. So I only select a subset of exits and internal BGP routers to upgrade. So I'm not forcing upgrades of all nodes. And these nodes, of course, need to know each other, and they need to synchronize on their information in addition to the regular BGP synchronization. And all BGP routers, synchronize on the default policy route as usual. And only the upgraded BGP routers, whether it's IBGP or eBGP routers, would synchronize on a set of exits for chosen prefixes. So it is possible for an IBGP router to target one prefix or one destination network, and I want to split the traffic for it through multiple exits. Okay, today the option available is you can set the local pref for that. Okay, so this choice of explicit exits gives you more control than local pref. Okay, so the way the forwarding occurs is that the IBGP router locally chooses one exit for the chosen prefix, and then installs that route in its forwarding table in addition to its default policy route. So what happens is that for packets that it has authority to choose the exits for, it will use the policy, the explicit route. And for packets which are actually chosen, which it does not have the authority, maybe some other IBGP router has already chosen an exit for it, it will not touch it. It will just use the normal forwarding. Okay, and so when the packet actually matches the explicit route, we have the problem of actually convincing the packet to go to that particular exit. The way we do it is we have a field called an address stack field, drawing analogy to a label stack in MPLS, and we simply push the destination address into the address stack and replace it with the exit router address. Okay, now what happens essentially is that you have invented a lightweight tunneling method to direct the packet in a connectionless manner to that exit, and when the packet shows up at that exit, the exit simply pops back the original destination address and sends it forward. Okay, so this, unlike IP tunneling, you don't need to configure these tunnels and so on and so forth. This can be done automatically. Okay, so an example here is that suppose these orange routers are the only ones upgraded. Normally, in BGP, you would have only one default exit to a destination autonomous system. If I want to go to destination D, which exists in autonomous system number 4, I might have an AS path 134, that is 134, and a particular exit which is chosen, AS route 3. But now in this framework, I have more flexibility to choose one or more exits for this exit, for this particular destination. So ABR1, which is an internal BGP router, IBGP router, can have explicit exits. It can either go this way, or even here. Okay, and by choosing this exit, I have implicitly chosen this AS path from here to here. Okay, so to do this, only these orange routers need to synchronize among themselves on the subset of prefixes, and so you don't again you don't need to do this for all prefixes, only for the prefixes where you really want to do some fine-grained traffic control. Okay, so the emphasis again has been on providing mechanisms for more fine-grained control. Yeah.
Clear definition of how local preference is computed.
Sorry, local pref?
There's no clear definition of how local pref is computed.
Is computed, yeah,
and
you can set it arbitrarily.
ISPs do it arbitrarily.
Yeah, yeah.
So in this particular example, okay. AS2, the ASBR4 is also going to see a route every time from that's 24, and BR3 is going to choose, and it's going to have 34. So using IBGP, the internal router, ABR1, can be made to see both the AS paths.
You can't choose both. I mean, in a local pref, you can choose only one.
It will know both.
It will know both. But you can choose only one based on local pref. It's like a priority.
I can define local pref in whatever way I want.
To choose one of them. But
to choose one of them.
Yeah, but that's not where the advantage is. You can actually simultaneously map some part of your traffic on both directions.
I can
you can't
split
take
the prefix into a half locally.
Yeah, so you're.
So there is still flexibility within BGP to play around.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to do that, right? So you'll, I mean, how far you'll be splitting. Suppose I want to do fine grain splitting among multiple exits, you'll have to have multiple entries, and then you'll have to have policies.
Have
right.
We have max 10, so I don't
Anyway, we'll take this offline. Okay, but I mean, so this is a much more direct. See, the another aspect of local pref is when you want to change your local pref settings, you'll have to send around announcements synchronizing with everybody else. And so whenever you want to make a change of a route, you'll have to actually announce routing, send routing updates to synchronize on this. Whereas here, once the IBGP router here, ABR1, knows that these are all the exits available, I can make an autonomous local choice without telling anybody else. Okay. So, I mean, so from a conceptual viewpoint, the coupling of a single route, okay, with the traffic which is mapped, means that whenever I have to change the route, I'll have to send around routing announcements, etc. So here the need for sending around routing announcements is not there. Okay. So obviously these things actually only make a difference when there's larger scale and when you really want the fine-grained thing to do. Okay. We'll talk about it a little more. So in terms of explicit AS path, we take the same concept of taking the path and hashing it. So instead of hashing internal path or a path of which is a sequence of router IDs, or allow trainings and link weights, we can hash a sequence of autonomous system IDs. Okay, so, and within an autonomous system, you're still free to choose a particular exit, and once you've chosen the exit, you can choose internal paths explicitly. Okay, so in some sense, you can think of this as a hierarchical explicit path setup. Okay, so I can choose either a path which goes like this, or I can choose a path which goes like this. Okay, but to support this, unlike in the OSPF case, where you had link state information and you can do local computation, here the price we pay is that if you want to make these paths available in general, you'll have to increase the number of BGP updates which are sent around. Because BGP is a path vector protocol, and unless the path vector is actually announced, you would not know the path. Okay. So the actual sort of benefits of when this might be actually useful are still up to debate. But conceptually, this can be done. So, so essentially, if one autonomous system supports multipath, multi AS paths, it could, instead of just normally it advertises one AS path. Suppose I want to go from AS0 to AS4. Suppose I have chosen this AS4, 04. I will just advertise this one AS path. Now I'll have to announce more AS paths if I'm interested in actually supporting this for other autonomous systems. We have not thought through what the incentive structures for actually increasing control traffic are. People don't already are worried about control traffic and it affecting stability. Okay, but this architecture does provide a mechanism for handling that. Okay. Now the flip side is that re-advertisements add control traffic overhead. Okay, so we have put these building blocks together in terms of an integrated OSPF BGP simulation. What that means is that we have created an SFNet simulation which has multiple autonomous systems, and within an autonomous system you have a non-trivial topology where only a subset of nodes are upgraded. We use the index-based routing internally. I have a choice of choosing particular exits for it. So all these aspects have been combined. Okay, so in this particular example, I'll describe how autonomous system chooses this AS path. Okay, and internally, I have at this autonomous system 2, I have only a few routers which are upgraded, marked as U here, but I'm still able to choose explicit paths from going from entry to exit, and then how the packet progresses. Okay, so to look at the details, at the autonomous system 1, essentially you'll have I choose an AS path, okay, and you would have an entry for potentially AS paths available and the hashes for them. And when I get into autonomous system 2, the incoming path ID, when I look at it, I have to choose an exit. Okay, so that's exactly what I do. So so I have an exit ASBR mapping here, and I don't swap the ePath ID at the entry router. We just swap it at the exit router because from the perspective of BGP routing, this whole thing is atomic operation. So you can either swap it at the entry or exit, but we just choose to swap ePath IDs at the exit. So I have chosen this ASBR, exit ASBR or exit router. And once I've chosen the exit router, I can look at my topology inside autonomous system 2, internal topology. And these are my only upgraded routers. And I'd like to choose an explicit path within my router and then encode it as the index-based scheme. So we show that we can do that. We can at the edge router can compute a bunch of available paths, and it can put a limit on how many paths it wants. And then this is the sort of concatenated string which we use. And if I look at the packet, the way it progresses, once it enters autonomous system 2, the destination address is pushed onto the address stack, and the exit router address is chosen. And when it goes out of the autonomous system, the ePath ID is updated, and the destination address is popped back. Okay, this is basically a simple illustration to show how the forwarding and all these things get put together. Okay, so Overall, these are the framework just provides building blocks that can be mapped to existing IP infrastructure, existing routing protocols, OSPF and BGP. Okay, and the primary target has been looking at the rationale of signaling, and the way I've articulated that is the need to map global path specifications or global identifiers, local identifiers, and instead of that, just coming up with a global path ID. Okay, and there are different ways of doing that. Overall, the flexibility that this this framework generally provides is that since it can be mapped to multiple protocols, we can now start seriously thinking about exploiting multiplicity gains in the internet. Okay, one way we see is that autonomous systems already have multiple connections to the internet. They don't necessarily use all of them simultaneously for applications. So you can think of several end-to-end flows that are mapped onto different paths. Okay, and the mapping can also be done on a best effort basis. With some expectation that there'll be some diversity in the mappings, okay. And then end-to-end application can measure the characteristics of each path. For example, it can measure if I map a TCP flow onto a path, I can automatically get its round-trip time, its available bandwidth, and its loss rate. So then the end-to-end application has the flexibility to map packets to flows, and the edge router might map flows to paths, okay, or flows to exits. So this is the architecture we see, and we are building applications where we can have multiple exits out of a single computer as well. And this was already envisioned in the past in SCTP, which was developed for multi-homed, but it's not been significantly deployed. But we just plan to revisit these issues. So there are several ways in which this can be done. Once these paths have been chosen, you can also provide some lightweight quality of service on these paths, either using OverQoS or Dave has done some nice work on using closed loop control QoS on these paths, etc. We are actually applying it to a number of situations. Currently, we have just started the deployment of this infrastructure on Planet Lab, and we will be providing an application programming interface so that people can actually directly map their applications on top of this. So that's for the overlay networks. And we are also looking at a peer-to-peer multimedia application where you go to Napster or a peer-to-peer lookup infrastructure like Cord and instantiate a bunch of nodes that will operate and offer a network service, in this case, multipath forwarding service for you. And these nodes are not special overlay nodes, they're just the peers. Another wireless application, we are rolling out a wireless community wireless network, multi-hop in the Troy around RPI. We plan to investigate things such as if I have different paths, I can map iframes, pframes, and do encoding, like FEC encoding differentially on different paths. So this is something we are exploring with our video group and also the wireless group. Okay. So the summary is that we abstractly think of traffic engineering as more broader than its current definition as seen as within a single ISP. Traffic engineering can also be thought of as end-to-end better routing performance or leveraging of end-to-end multiplicity. And so the primary issues are to avoid signaling so that you can you don't have to be constrained to a signaling-based protocol like MPLS so that you can go to OSPF, BGP, or other end-to-end applications. And broadly, the key thing is to avoid the coupling between route availability and the traffic you want actually mapped to the route, okay? And also broaden the number of routes available through multipath, etc. And giving control for each domain, each node can only find routes, explicit routes, within its domain of visibility, not end-to-end. So the notion of source routing could be revisited in that way. So the overall goal is to, there is a lot of rich interconnectivity in the internet. The internet is no longer a tree. There's far more meshing in the internet, and we have not exploited these multiplicity gains, whether for resilience or we're just starting to scratch the surface, and it's high time we start doing that. The overall goal is to show that these ideas have generic value. It can be applied, whether it's on the peer-to-peer level or at the overlay level in Planet Lab or in a wireless network. Thank you.
Yeah. So I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So if you allow each node to make autonomous decision on the routes,
mm-hmm.
then how do you prevent it to how do you prevent a loop from happening?
So each node has some policies to avoid looping. If it's only the edge node, typically of a network, which chooses a route, okay, and the route computation algorithm has to make sure that the route it computes are loop free. Okay, so at the route computation level, you have to figure out that you're getting loop-free routes. Second thing is, if at an intermediate node I show up with an invalid path ID, we need an error handling condition so that the packet is guaranteed not to forever loop. Okay, it might go around a loop once, but then it should get out. So the way we do that right now is to map it to a default path. So the way we do it is that, like in OSPF, we assume that the new route, the upgraded route, is also support shortest path, and will also support more paths than shortest paths. So if the new paths don't work out, the packets will be remapped to the shortest path, and the path ID will be zeroed out so that you won't interpret it in future routers. So that is the consistency criterion within a domain, and you can take the same ideas end to end.
If there's a routing failure,
mm-hmm.
will you do better than today, or will you do worse than today?
Yeah, I believe we'll do better, because the idea is that routing instabilities are related to, I mean, several of the routing instabilities are actually traffic engineering related. People actually advertise and withdraw routes, or at least in the BGP context. If you are allowed to choose routes explicitly and know all the routes in advance, and then you're allowed mapping of packets to routes using a path ID type mechanism, you don't have to actually have the routing dynamics associated with setting up and tearing down routes. That is related to the comment that route availability is coupled with.
To take the other side, if a link is associated with lots of path IDs,
mm-hmm.
you'll have to withdraw a lot of state.
Mm. That's only
when
at.
When it comes back up again, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't this get convergence problems?
Not at all. I mean, case where, let's take the intra-domain case, right, where we use the index-based path ID, which is our final proposal. So when a link goes down, right, that link, there's an LSA which is announced, which goes to everybody, then every node will,
when you get into a distance vector paradigm, you might be in trouble.
Yeah, so at the inter-domain routing part of things, we proposed the AS path choice, explicit AS path choice, primarily as a concept. I mean, we acknowledge that whenever something changes, you have to send around control messages. So we believe that explicit AS path choices will be done very sparingly. But probably the one of the benefits is to be able to choose exits. Because today, if you look at a bulk of AT&T's or internal traffic engineering decisions, they revolve around managing the peering agreements at a fine granularity. So exit routing is viewed as one of the important things. They also worry about, some ISPs I've talked to, Telstra and these kinds of people, they are really worried about their inbound traffic as well, in addition to outbound. So we don't have a clear, we're not trying to solve all the problems. I just propose the multi or explicit AS path as a logical extension of the intra-path ID concept. Okay, it clearly has a disadvantage, which is linked to the path vector concept. So this is like dynamic packet state, yes.
Okay.
So this is an example of dynamic packet state.
People don't like.
I don't care if they don't like. The thing is, we have actually implemented and show that it's not a big deal. We are talking about routing options or something like that. We are talking about a processing that can be done in fast path, and it's just a swapping operation. If you can do MPLS swapping,
I just wanted to know that.
Okay, I'm on your side. It's just that it's end-to-end, you don't have signaling today. It's only when you really want to cross domains. Signaling, the history has been that signaling has been simplified over time. Okay, the worst kind of signaling is found in X.25, which has link-to-link signaling in addition to end-to-end signaling and so on. So over time, frame relay signaling is dramatically simplified, MPLS signaling and RSVP signaling are, in a sense, very dramatically simplified. So I don't have grudge against signaling per se. That's a good question. But end to end, you don't have the option of signaling. So if I want to, if I view path multi or getting path multiplicity as an option, and I want to be able to upgrade existing routing protocols, they don't support signaling. So if I go to a provider, so there are some providers who have upgraded their networks to MPLS. There are some providers who have their OSPF networks or ISIS networks. But these OSPF ISIS networks people are still doing a lot of link weight tweaking to achieve their traffic engineering goals. They want both. They want to have the advantage of MPLS, and they want to leverage the knowledge base of OSPF. They don't want to get out of that. So here's a simple upgrade path for them to achieve their goals, provided they're willing to handle the trade-offs which I mentioned in the system. Okay, so it has an end-to-end significance if you want to actually open up multiplicity and the spatial temporal gains, multiplexing gains which you can get from multiplicity end-to-end. Today, even though there have been advances in multiplicity technology, like SCTP is there, and there have been a lot of algorithms, folks have come up with lots of multipath routing and computation algorithm, k-shortest paths has been highly optimized and so on. But we have not seen this happening. So the problem is architectural, which the restriction of signaling makes this not possible.
Yeah, I think the other case we can make is that it gives you more control to make the decision at the edge, right?
Right. And only within your domain of visibility. Right. So this is in some sense best effort multipath proposal. I mean, the goal is not to provide you an explicit path from source to destination, which was the original goal of source routing, but it's more sort of reasonable goal of within a domain of visibility, whether it's at a intra-domain or inter-domain level, I can make multipaths available to you and give you flexibility on choosing how many multipaths, how much state, complexity, and so on. So these are building blocks. And the way the actual form it will take will depend upon deployment realities. So we are studying that right now. Yeah?
So one potential security problem is if one of the routers is compromised, they can change all their outbound packets, the path
mm-hmm.
ID,
yeah.
to target a particular router which may be pretty far from that one.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah, we've not studied security. I mean, I'm pretty poor on security. I don't even know what the security issues are. Yeah. So, I don't even have a response for you. So, yeah, these kinds of issues can be studied. I mean, what will happen? There is certainly more vulnerability at the routers which are upgraded because they can do more bad things. Right. So. Thank you.